Somewhere within us is that unified connection. Near-death experiences are one way this connection is being brought to the fore. PMH Atwater's work as a researcher, counselor, and author is sharing insights on these experiences, which are deepening our unified vision. Thanks for joining us for Tributaries. PMH, you came into this research of children's near-death experiences, or NDEs, experientially, not just academically. So were you a child when this happened to you?
No, I was about, maybe 38.
Can you just give us briefly what your experience was?
Well, I just want everybody out there to realize that I had three near-death experiences in 3 months. And people say, well, why did you get into research? And I say, because that was what I was told to do in my third near-death experience by what I call the voice like none other. I didn't know what to call this kind of voice. This was so big. It was like the whole universe is talking to me. I was told, and I quote, test revelation. You are to do the research, one book for each death. Then I was shown what that meant. So after I got over what I call the heavenly sledgehammer effect, i.e. three near-death experiences in 3 months, and was reasonably human again, that is to say I could talk and walk like a human being, you know, I had to relearn how to crawl, how to stand, how to walk, climb stairs, tell the difference between left and right, rebuild all my belief system.
I definitely would have not rebuilt my belief systems.
By the summer of the next year, 1978, that's when I met Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I told her about what had happened to me. And she said I was a near-death survivor. She did not use the term experiencer. And then she told me about the near-death experience. I never heard of it. Never heard of Raymond Moody, his book, nothing. So I had that to go on. I'm a cop's kid. I was raised in a police station. So I knew about police investigative techniques. And Dad would always say, the body says more than the mouth does. So you're really watching the person's body and what they do and the different tones in the voice. I was totally infused by this job I had to do. No question here. And I had to do my job according to what I was taught and what I knew to be true in working with people. You know, in police work, you never say a word before the individual does. In other words, you can't use questionnaires. Let's say, for instance, there was an accident. A cop can go up to a person and they can say, did you see anything? If the person says accident or car, then and then only can the police officer say accident or car. You see how that works?
Of course.
And that's the way I worked.
Isn't it curious that you had that background and you had that father?
Yeah. So I've always been this person who's tearing things apart.
You know, I just wanted to chat more about these experiences, and your research involved many, many children. And unlike adults, children don't have a before and after to draw from. So when we look at what you recognize as three basic human drives, identity, community, and purpose, the children are working off a totally different paradigm. What effects have you seen from this?
Well, we have to be clear here about the age of the child. Going from birth to about the age of 5, these are the ones that have no before. From about 6-7 years on, then those children are more like adults.
Right.
So to give you a little sense here of how that works, the average adult takes about 7 to 10 years to integrate their experience. But for the average child, it takes 20 to 40 years. And that's because children don't integrate, they compensate. With these very, very little ones, one of the complicating factors is 90%, This specific study I'm talking about is 397 people, okay? 90% did not bond with their parents. That doesn't mean they didn't love them. They were still bonded to the other side. So you see, with that younger group, we have an entirely different pattern.
So Khalil Gibran has that famous poem that starts, "Your children are not your children," and many highly spiritual people say the same. So in speaking to parents of children who have more than one child, and they have one child who was an NDE experiencer, can you share how they saw their role as parents changing, or did they?
Certainly true with the little ones. Their parents are certainly not their parents, and the research shows that very clearly. These very little ones, they don't have a sense of mom and dad, brothers and sisters, school. They have a real challenge of figuring out what that is, because they're still attached to what you and I might call the life continuum. Not necessarily past life, although in some cases you run into that. Well, let me kind of describe what they say. And that is that this very light-filled world, and they have a very clear sense that this is like a stream, what you and I might call a stream of consciousness. And so they come into this life, they don't know what a body is, and they don't know what to do with that body. They know more than their parents do. Other kids in the family look at them as if they were from another planet. They go to school. They know more than the teachers do. They're absolutely bored out of their tree by school. One of the wonderful things in the book, The Forever Angels, there's a chapter on historical cases. And you'll find when they come in, they're really interested in what makes this world tick.
Isn't that true of so many people?
No.
aren't we all figuring out what we're doing here?
Well, we're figuring out
how
what
it
we're
works.
Doing here, but with these little bitty ones, they're specific. What an aura is, how it works, and, you know, the different ways that an aura can move. So when I say they're interested in what makes the world work, I'm being very specific.
Yes, yes, I get that. And back to the parents, I'm wondering, is there very much education for parents who have a child that has had a near-death experience?
Well, at this point in time, the best bet is my two books that I've written on this. Certainly The Forever Angels, Near-Death Experiences in Childhood and Their Lifelong Impact. That's about the little tiny ones. But the older kids, that's the new children and near-death experiences. And I really recommend that to parents and teachers, because in the back of that is a very large resource section where I talk about what they can do. Believe it or not, one of the most powerful things a parent can do, or a teacher or a psychologist, that's very, very simple. Teach them about visualization. Really, teach them about visualization, whereby they can go back to that light-filled world, and they can be there and feel good about being there, and then can come back to this world, realizing and knowing that in this world, this is where we work things out. Just by using visualization techniques, you can do more for your child than anything else. And the second thing is make your book. And I don't care how old you are, even adults, but especially children. And sit down with them and help them make a book. And then inside, put everything you can remember. Absolutely everything. Anything mom or dad or friends or anybody said along the way. If you have a poem or something that you wrote, put that in the book. How much this helps everybody. Anybody and everybody who ever made their book told me that this was the most important thing they did. And it helped them to integrate their experience quicker and better than anything else. So, you know, you don't have to go running to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Make your book. So learn visualization, make your book, and then just let the child or the individual talk. There can't be any judgment, no bias. Just let them talk.
Right. And that's why I wondered with my original question here about adults, a caring parent who might recognize in their child, oh, this child is different. Because I feel like what is perhaps the most important thing to come out of all of your research, all of this experience with children, we all have individual stories. And of course,
yes,
when there is a child who has another type of experience coming in, that's why I asked you, and I thought it was quite insightful looking at the three basic human drives of identity, community, and purpose being changed or being shifted by someone who has had this experience. So what's coming out of all this is more compassion. As crazy as these times are, as rampant, I believe, is our opportunity for compassion. Of course, you listen to somebody and their story, whether it's NDE or not, it's going to make a change and it's going to bring compassion between individuals. Yes.
Yeah, just talk it out or listen to their story. That helps the individual. It helps you. It helps everybody else. It does more than anything else you can do, I think. And this is what I've seen again and again and again.
Could you describe or share an experience that you've heard from someone? As you've mentioned, you have so much experience, not only with yourself, but with speaking to so many others. And I was wondering, is there an experience that gives you chills or that still just blows your mind?
That just really blows. One of them is an adult. His name is Ricky. Ricky was maybe mid-20s, and he was in school, college, and got a job as a bag boy at a local supermarket, whereby he could earn a little extra money. On this particular day, he was taking out the bags to the woman's car. He was putting them in the trunk of the car. When the woman in the car suddenly started up her car and backed up. At the same moment, a woman across the way backed up very suddenly. So Ricky was caught in the middle of these two fenders, and the woman, instead of stopping the car, panicked and stepped on the gas. So Ricky was literally ground in half. So he was rushed to the hospital, of course, dead on arrival. Now, fortunately, this was a teaching hospital. So his corpse is over one side in this room, and the teaching class comes by. The students come by, and they needed a cadaver to work on. So the people in the room gave this class Ricky's body. So they went in another room and they hooked him up and they had all the machinery and they were going through all these motions. And pretty soon his heart started beating. Well, you know, they thought there was something wrong with the equipment. So they got a hold of a hierarchy kind of fellow. He came down, he tested the equipment. This guy is really coming back. So we have the case of Ricky Bradshaw. Everything on him was ground in half except for his spinal column. That was the only thing intact. They had to put him in an iron lung so he could breathe. So, you know, lots and lots of months, all kinds of care. They finally got him to the point where he was a living, breathing human being again. He could walk and talk, and he could get out with everybody else. And he told this incredible story of what happened to him while he was dead. And believe me, this man was very dead. And what happened to him, he saw these incredible beings, their incredible music and all these scenes, but he was shown all of history from beginning to end during this time frame. All of history from beginning to end. When I heard Ricky, when I met him, when I heard him, he was talking about the experience and, of course, how it changed him, naturally. But how much he was changed just by knowing the history of the human race on planet Earth. And, of course, we all wanted to know, you know, the future, you know, what's going to happen. And he knew. And he knew how long human beings would be on planet Earth and what would happen with planet Earth. But he would not tell us anything about the future. He says, no. He says, I was instructed not to tell you. That just, wow, just hit me. Wow. And I came across a number of cases like that.
Yes, Daniel Brinkley is certainly one.
Well, his was never as detailed as Ricky. But yeah, Daniel was one. We've had a number of cases that are really quite stunning.
And it's interesting that everyone's story, not unlike our own individual lives, is different. There are certain similarities, of course. And another important thing, I think, about the near-death experience is that it addresses more than just what's on the other side.
Right. Absolutely.
The shift is incredible.
As did Ricky's.
Yes.
Talking about the human race and how we changed and what we went through. Yes, indeed.
I was really happy in your book that you brought up the constellation work of Bert Hellinger. He's done a lot and really recognizes the soul in his
right.
work in helping people. And that's
right.
certainly a piece that needs to be recognized, isn't it?
Right. There were a number of people, scientists and doctors, that I spoke about in the Forever Angels, and one of them was very, very specific about abortions, and he no longer uses the term fetus. He calls them the preborn, and I found this again and again and again in my research, that very often people can remember being in the womb, and they talk about being in the womb. And in the book, I have several drawings that people made of being in the womb. One of them, Penny, case 33, she drew a picture of her in the womb, and her mother starting to smoke a cigarette. And that affected her so much in the womb. It upset her. It caused her to choke and have various problems in the womb.
You know, you spoke about the visualization, and it's also important to speak to allowing for imagination in all of in all of our lives.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is healthy. That is educational. It's like it completes your life. It's so important for a healthy individual to respect their imagination, to have a place in their life for imagination. That's where we create. This is where we expand. This is where we're able to explore our own emotions, our feelings, our dreams.
Yes. So for me, all of this brings out, once again, and this hits me from many directions all the time, it's trust the process. And I'm wondering how you would formulate how all of this has affected you and how you live your life.
Well, my dear, I'm a new and different person.
Yes.
I'm not the same person I was before I died. I'm a new me, no doubt. I don't even relate to that person except to understand and to appreciate what I went through, what I knew then. But the person I am now, let me give you a quick little story here. My oldest daughter, you know, I come from Idaho. And in Idaho, we're all plain speakers. We get right to the point. And I was in the kitchen, and my daughter came in, and she said, well, she's pointing her finger at me. She says, well, You're nicer now than you used to be, and you're easier to talk to, but you're not Mom, and I want Mom back. Well, you know, we spent decades looking for that woman, never did find her. She's just gone. All for these years, you settled down and said, well, you're okay. I can tolerate you. You're okay.
What part of Mom was missing for her?
The personalization. She being my daughter. She wanted that sense of ownership. Mm. And we find this a lot. This is a big deal in families because a child needs to know that they belong to you. They need that sense of specialness and ownership. If a parent has had a near-death experience, they will no longer be able to show that in the same way. So the child then can have difficulty. And we find this with divorces, certainly the older ones. The divorce rate is 77 to 80% divorced within 5 to 6 years after their experience. And it's the same kind of thing. Mm. Suddenly afterward, you love everybody.
Right.
But everybody doesn't feel that love. For instance, in a married couple, the other one, the other spouse who didn't have the experience, they feel as if you're flirting with everybody. They feel bereft because there's no longer that sense of being special to you. And that doesn't mean that you're not giving them lots and lots of love, but it's a different kind of love. You know, when we're talking about unconditional love, we're talking about God's love, agape, that sense of wholeness. But, you know, most people want to be privy. They want to be special. So a near-death experiencer has a real challenge in how to express their feelings, their ideas, their dreams, their emotions without appearing to be some kind of goof-off or some kind of liar,
right,
or some kind of individual that wants attention all the time. It's not that kind of thing at all. You just love everybody.
Yes.
And, you know, I can certainly attest to that in my own case. It took me a while to learn how to sort of tamp it down a little bit. What I tell people on the spiritual path or this kind of adventure, I tell them all, please remember the first rule of discipleship. Don't freak the natives. If we can remember that, sort of tone it down a little bit.
Understood. Yeah. You know, one thing that you may shoot this idea down because of your experience and research, et cetera, but with someone who's had an NDE, their experience of that eternal life is brought very front and center into their consciousness, whereas those that have not, I believe they've got it strongly. It's not consciously brought to the fore, but there are many things that we do because of that.
Yeah, we have a broader worldview.
Right.
Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter if you've had one of these kinds of experiences or not. We can take classes. We can read books. We can have experiences, enlightening experiences, spiritual experiences, the idea of altered states of consciousness. And the more we have of these, the more open we are to the expansions of consciousness, the more we begin to realize, my goodness, this is a big world.
Right.
Yeah, and this is like, wow!
Certainly, I appreciate you writing these books and bringing this awareness to the fore, because it's only going to expand all of our compassion and our ability to love other. And,
right.
And that's certainly up right now, isn't it, in the world?
Yeah, especially a manual for developing humans. We seem to have forgotten that years and years ago, maybe thousands of years ago, the word Hugh, H-U, Hugh, was considered to be the sound of God. That was that sense of allness, that bigness was Hugh. So if you were human, you were God-man, God-woman. This idea of being human was considered to be the highest you could be. If we could just learn to be who we are God beings. In the Christian Bible and a lot of other studies, a lot of other traditions, this idea of ye are gods, it's absolutely written in a lot of these holy books or various types of transcripts. We are gods in the making. Most of these experiencers, let's say you had a full-blown kundalini experience or a spiritual transformation of some kind or near-death experience, you come back with that sense that you are a god in the making. So A Manual for Developing Humans has a fifth-dimensional format, doesn't have a regular format. Each section, you have conscious, subconscious, and superconscious covered in each section. And then it takes you right through thinking, speaking, and into the different parts of being. It really helps people to be who and what we are.
Yes, and certainly learning that piece about being special without having to hold another responsible or beholden is
and that's what's in the manual.
Such a
key.
What the
manual's for.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well,
one
thank
down.
You. I'm one of these people that I get excited easy.
I can tell.
Because life is so wonderful every moment. Do you know what happened Saturday? I am so excited. Saturday is my birthday, and I get to be 83. Isn't that a kick?
Yes. Now, do you recognize your other birthday of when you came back, or is that what you're talking about?
No, because to me, every day is a birthday. Every hour is a birthday.
Well said, yes.
Yeah. And it's all so much fun. Even if I suffer, there's a reason and purpose for that, and I suffer well.
Thank you, PMH Atwater, for joining us. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are on iTunes and those other social media podcast places, wherever they are. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.